I'll admit it. I will eat my neighbors. I'm not letting my kids die. I'm just going to be honest. My superpowers, being honest, I've extrapolated this out, and I won't have to for a few years since I got food and stuff, but I'm literally looking at my neighbors now and going, I'm ready to hang them up and gut them and skin them and chop them up. You know what? I'm ready. My daughters aren't starving to death. I'll eat my neighbors. My superpower is being honest. I'll eat your ass. I will. Combat model. Optimum self-sufficiency. Probably the leader. The point is have you thought about that yet? Because I'm somebody that thought I could fix this, and I'm starting to think about having to eat my neighbors. You think I like sizing up my neighbor, how I'm going to haul him up by a chain and chop his ass up? I'll do it. I will eat your ass. And that's why I want the globalists to know. I will eat your ass first.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 307. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. Night of the Living White People. So the story that is often told about two Americas would be the wealthy, well-to-do America and the not-so-well-to-do. The people at the top and the people at the bottom who seek to serve them, not out of a need to serve a higher up, but because they want survival. They want a home, and they want food, and they want maybe a vehicle, money for a vacation. They just want to enjoy life. And so the two Americas that has always been described to us is the rich v. poor. And that should make perfect sense to everybody, because it's pretty clear who holds all the money. It's pretty clear who holds all the power. But what is the real two Americas? And how has it been highlighted by the COVID-19 pandemic? I want to familiarize you with a term. Well, I say that, but you're likely already familiar with this term, boogaloo. So right away, the thing that comes to mind, I'm sure it did for you, is electric boogaloo. Break into electric boogaloo. Right, a movie from the 80s that's sort of centered around the hip hop culture. And for whatever reason, the white supremacist culture, Trump supporters, have decided to start using this name, and I found that kind of interesting. So I decided to dig around, figure out why. Everything about white supremacy has to be coded in language, you know, like a weasel language. They got to find clever ways to get around the fact that they're just a bunch of flaming white supremacists. So they're having to, I mean, a lot of white supremacist groups have even stopped using the swastika, and they've come up with new symbols, new white power symbols that other white supremacists know that they're Nazis, but the general public doesn't know they're Nazis. And I've heard this in any number of interviews from white supremacists. They said, we had to stop using the swastika because it turns people off. So their objective is still the same. They don't like Jews. They don't like black people. They don't like women. You know, they want a white future. They want a white country, blah, blah, blah. But they said, we want to recruit people, and it's really hard to recruit people when you're using a swastika. Okay, so the spirit is still there, even though they don't use the swastika. When Obama became president, they became the Tea Party. And that sounds innocuous enough, right? And then they have the yellow flag with the coiled snake, and they go, don't tread on me and don't take my health care. And that was nothing more than white supremacy again. And of course, protecting all of their rich white masters. And then as it goes, they start taking up more things. The police flag, you know, with the blue stripe on it, which if you're a police officer, you police culture, you come from a family of police, you go into the police yourself, the thin blue line, the whole thing that happened in August, that's just a part of your family's culture. Well, when police started getting away with murdering black people, unarmed black people, mind you, well, then that police flag, that became a symbol for white supremacy. And then, well, there's too many white cops, and the white cops are getting away with killing black people, and a lot of people start seeing that symbol as white supremacy, and then they got to move on. So then it becomes, I talked about this a number of episodes ago, about the symbolism. And then they start using the Punisher flag, or the Punisher skull. And then the Punisher skull is a symbol of white supremacy. And why is it? Well, because Punisher is white, and he owns lots and lots of guns, And although he's supposed to be a good guy, I remember reading the Punisher comics, the fact that he has all these guns and he's a vigilante and he sees himself as a hero and a patriot, and that's the way these folks see themselves. So a lot of those symbols and the way that they were embraced made some sense to me. I could see where they came from and how they came to be. But now this, the Boogaloo thing. The other thing it's referred to as is the Big Igloo or the Big Luau. This is the name that Nazis have decided to take on for themselves. This is what they're referring to as the Second Civil War. So for a long time, it doesn't matter what the problem is. Okay, there's nothing that can't be solved by either buying a gun or buying more guns or marching around with guns or waving your guns around. There's nothing that cannot be solved with lots and lots and lots and lots of guns. And what they're secretly hoping for, or not so secretly, because if you've listened to Alex Jones talk, if you've listened to Rush Limbaugh talk, is Sean Hannity talk, what you hear is the potential coming of a second civil war. And that kind of language, well, just like the whole swastika thing, that started getting a lot of people nervous. That started getting a lot of people's backs up. People tend to not like that language. People tend to not like the idea that if it comes to it, you're going to kill your neighbor. But then you have people like Alex Jones who will very happily say, I'm going to eat my neighbor's ass, and which that's just fabulous. Good for you, sir. So the latest thing that they have couched it in is the Boogaloo, the Big Igloo or the Big Luau. And so what they're doing now, because they think that they're too cute by half, is they've got pictures of igloos that they have on hats and T-shirts and profile pictures and Hawaiian shirts. You'll see at some of these rallies, these white power rallies that have been happening in state houses where they're demanding that we reopen the government because You'll see some of the guys wearing Hawaiian shirts, and I didn't understand what that was or why that was, but I just, when I think of Hawaiian shirts, I think of, like, I don't know, to quote The Simpsons, a big fat party animal, like, but that's not what it is. This is another symbol of white supremacy, and you can look this up. They've got Facebook groups, but Facebook has been working to take down these Boogaloo groups. And Boogaloo is what they're referring to as, instead of calling it the Second Civil War, they've rebranded it as the Boogaloo. And they think they're being cute. So you can look around. There's the Mujahideen, and there's, you know, and then there's some secret groups like the Mujahideen, which is Boogaloo blended with the Mujahideen. But then there are some secret Boogaloo groups, where you have to, you know, you have to be a member to get in. Two things about these groups that I found really interesting. Unlike a lot of other white power groups in the past, these ones have increasingly become anti-cop, which is crazy to me, because when I think of the hard right-wing groups and the fact that for a little while they had, you know, the blue flag and the Blue Lives Matter and all that stuff, and then you got all these sheriff's deputies, you know, that are openly white supremacist. And I go, oh, so the cops are kind of, you know, a lot of the police, not all of them obviously, but a lot of the police are with these white supremacists. Now, at the state houses, you'll see these white supremacists shouting down the police, you know, Capitol Police that are keeping the protesters from inside the state house or keeping them from getting to and or injuring or killing the governor. The police that have decided to side with the state and with the people that they work for, because if you work for a police department, you work for the citizens. You are a government worker and you do work for the citizens. And so now that all of these white power protests are happening at state houses, the thing that has not happened is the police have not joined these white supremacists. There's plenty of police that are cool with what's happening, but they've still been doing their jobs and not allowing these folks into these state houses to cause ruckus or kill people or whatever these dum-dums want to do. So on these Boogaloo pages, you'll see lots and lots of anti-police rhetoric, which is a bit of a surprise to me. The other thing is the racism aspect. So the Boogaloo groups are obviously full of horribly, horribly racist, deplorable people. But Facebook and some other social media sites have begun taking taking down some of the Boogaloo pages, because you've got people calling for an armed insurrection, and you know you're the head of Facebook. You probably don't want that playing out on your website. You know, you helped Donald Trump become president over there at Facebook, but maybe you don't want the entire economy or the entire civilization to collapse. So they started taking down a lot of these Boogaloo pages. Not all of them, but some of them. And I noticed the ones that are left up, even though there are people on there who are cool with being racist and totally cool with using coded racist language, anytime somebody uses uncoded racist language, which would be the way that they talk to each other when they think nobody's listening, those pages, so that they're not taken down, they've been posting to their members, hey, don't be racist. Racists are not allowed in this group. And that's not true, because obviously that's their whole shtick. Their whole shtick is white supremacy. They say, no. We can't have racists in this group because we're not a racist. We're just freedom-loving Americans and all this other stuff. Be aware of that. Be aware that that's going on. So start with the bad news. Let me get to the better news. With what you've seen at these state houses, it can seem like there's a lot of these people. And there's a significant number of them. But they are by no means a majority. I don't spend a lot of time on social media. I have a social media account for my business. And about the only other time that I go on social media is when I'm doing research for something for this show. Otherwise, I don't go on social media because I think it's a sewer and an open sewer. The minute I open my Facebook account, it doesn't even matter. Like even with my business account, it doesn't even matter. I mean, straight away, I'm going to see something effing stupid. I'm going to see a story that's absolutely not true. Or I'm going to see a bunch of white supremacists parading around doing white supremacist crap. Social media is just an open effing sewer. And with that, it can seem like there's a majority. Like all the Nazis that have showed up to the state houses and demanded that we open up America. But I read an article over at the New York Times titled, Why the Trump Ploy Isn't Working. So the headline caught me right away. And I said, oh, it's not. I'd kind of like to know why it's not. That sounds like good news. But when I delved into the article, I learned a little bit more that I didn't expect. So I'm going to quote to you directly here. Even in a pandemic, there are weavers and rippers. The weavers try to spiritually hold each other so we can get through this together. The rippers, from Donald Trump on down, see everything through the prism of politics and still emphasize division. For the rippers on the left and right, politics is a war that gives life meaning. Fortunately, the rippers are not winning. America is pretty united right now. In an ABC News Ipsos poll last week, 98% of Democrats and 82% of Republicans supported social distancing rules. According to a Yahoo News YouGov survey, nearly 90% of Americans think a second wave of the virus would be at least somewhat likely if the lockdowns ended today. A Pew survey found 89% of Republicans and 89% of Democrats. These are actually truly bipartisan things. Quoting again, support the bipartisan federal packages. 89% of both Democrats and Republicans support the packages that are helping people. And 77% of American adults think that more aid will be necessary. According to a USA Today Ipsos poll, most of the policies on offer enjoyed tremendous bipartisan support, such as increased testing. 90% approve of that. Temporarily halting immigration, 79%. And continuing the lockdown through the end of April, or until the end of April, 69%. A KFF poll shows that people who have lost their jobs are just as supportive of the lockdowns as people who have not. The polarization industry is loath to admit this, But once you set aside the Trump circus, we are now more united than at any time since 9/11. The pandemic has reminded us of our interdependence and the need for a strong, effective government. It has also taken us to a deeper level. The polarization over the past decades has not been about us disagreeing more. It's been about us hating each other more. This has required constant volleys of dehumanization. This dehumanization has always been a bit of a mirage. A new study from the group Beyond Conflict shows that Republicans and Democrats substantially exaggerate how much the other side dislikes and disagrees with them. The pandemic has been a massive humanizing force, allowing us to see each other on a level much deeper than politics, to see the fragility, the fear, and the courage. I was just going to wrap this article up with a quick story. On May 8th, I recommended that you watch In This Together, a PBS American Portrait story that was airing and streaming on PBS. It's just regular Americans talking into their cell phones and showing what they're going through. There's a mom giving birth to twins while in the hospital with the coronavirus. After they're born, she can't see her baby for weeks. There is a couple of married nurses who have to send their six-year-old to live with grandma while they shuttle to the hospital, and the boy can't understand what's happening. And the hurt and missing manifest as tantrums. There's an older woman sitting in a dark living room saying, quote, "I never expected to be alone. My husband tested positive for COVID. He lasted over a week. He didn't die until St. Patrick's Day. We're 78, and I know it sounds funny, but I thought we were going to grow old together, and now I'm alone. We're also being united by those who are sacrificing for the common good. The nurse who came from North Carolina to serve in New York, even though she has an 8-month-old baby living at home. The EMTs who are living through death after death. The workers who lived in the same factory for 28 days to make masks. In normal times, the rippers hog the media spotlight. But now you see regular Americans hurt in their deepest places and being their best selves. Everywhere, I hear the same refrain. We are not standing at a portal to the future, and we are not going back to how it used to be." Now, even though I don't consume a lot of social media, my lovely wife does. And when I let her read this article, she said to me, I believe it because it's there, and it's the New York Times, but she says, "That's just not what I see." And I know why she doesn't, because she's on social media. And she doesn't have the same bubble that a lot of people on social media have. She has family members who are Trumpers. She's an educator. And some of her education friends are Trumpers. Not many. The overwhelming majority of people that she is in contact with are obviously progressive, like her husband and like her. But when she sees the negativity, when she sees the Trumpers, when she sees the people marching around with their guns and demanding revolution, maybe it's just our negativity. The fact that it would seem that we are amplifying the bad over the good, because there is a lot of good. But just the fact that her perception has been changed, you know, these numbers are stark. The fact that there are gigantic numbers supporting the aid, supporting the regular workers, supporting, you know, raising people's wages and a different healthcare system, and the fact that Republicans and Democrats agree, almost completely agree on these exact same things. And we are united. And the things that Trump is doing, they're not working anymore. One lesson would be, obviously, social media can do a lot of good, but overwhelmingly, it's not helping. And it's creating more hurt, and it's creating more anxiety. And the fact that we're all quarantined right now is a perfect prescription for being on social media more. And it's an easy way to kill time. And it's endlessly addicting. There's videos, there's blog posts, there's new products, there's celebrity news, there's regular news, there's completely made up news. But for ourselves and for our own mental health, We need to find a way out of the social media landscape because it's not good for us. I was just reading over at CNN about how Joe Biden, who's the presumptive Democratic candidate, is leading Trump, not just nationally, but in all the key battleground states that Trump won last time. And even though there's all those clear indicators that Biden is ahead and strongly ahead right now, a majority of the country still thinks that Trump is going to win. And they've got any number of different reasons for it. One, they felt pretty strongly about, you know, the fact that Hillary was going to win in 2016, and then that didn't happen. The other thing is the fact that he ascended to president, or what the white supremacists refer to as amongst themselves as God Emperor. That's what they call it. They call him God Emperor. I told you, you belong to a cult. But even with those clear numbers that suggest he's going to lose, most people feel like he is still going to win. So I think a lot of that gets covered by not just what happened in 2016, but the fact that the presence of the people at these state houses that are marching around with guns and demanding, you know, that we open everything back up and demand that everybody gets the coronavirus, even though those folks are not the majority, because they are so loud, because they do command the attention, it can seem like they are a majority. The president does not have a majority of the country with him. He never has. He's never had anything even close to a mandate. But there is a good chance that he will see a second term if people get too comfortable. So I'm glad that the polls have him ahead. That's A. But I'm also glad that people don't feel as confident as they did last time. That's important. Because I think when people feel too confident, they go, oh, to hell with it. We don't need to turn out because Biden's going to win. No problem. We did that in 2016, and then Hillary lost. Kind of the last thing I want to cover is another New York Times article that says, the headline is, Republicans, it's too late to back away from Trump. So in the memos that are being shared within the GOP ranks, so they've got their internal polling, they got the external polling, and then they've got the messaging that they share with one another. And the messaging is this: do not back away from Trump. He's wrong about everything. He hurt his own poll numbers by going out there and playing scientist every day when he doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. But and they said, hey, yeah, he's ignorant and he's a white supremacist and all this other stuff, but do not back away from Trump. But then that memo goes on and it says, but don't defend Trump. Whoa, wait a minute. Don't back away from him, but don't defend him. So the tricky thing that Republicans have to do is they have to seem close enough to him, but not so close. This is my extrapolation, but not so close that they are seemingly as dumb as he is. Although there are some people who have no problem defending him and even making things up for him, like Trey Gowdy. Listen up. I know it seems dark. And it seems that when you see these people out marching with Trump flags, you know, and guns and white supremacist imagery, it can seem like they are the majority, but they are not. They have the guns, but they don't have the numbers. And that is why they have the guns. There is no problem that a lot of these folks believe cannot be fixed by a gun, either by marching around with a gun or indiscriminately shooting people. Why they're marching in front of state houses with guns, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot the governor and open everything back up and then what? Catch a murder charge? I know it seems like they're the majority, but they're not. They're just the loudest. And that's why you're seeing so much of them. Trump is not a good president. He does not have the support of the American people. But he's loud and he's on TV a lot and he tweets a lot. And the media covers all of his tweets. And so it can seem like he's important. it can seem like he has the support, but he's not. He doesn't have the support. He doesn't have anywhere near a majority. I'm signed up with the Trump campaign, and I have been since 2015. But this year, I decided to sign up for their texts as well. So I get about half a dozen to maybe 8 or 9 texts a day from different from 2 different phone numbers. And in those texts, some of the people claim to be Newt Gingrich. Some of the people claim to be Sarah Huckabee Sanders. They claim to be the, you know, the president's sons. And they're very clever. They'll say, "Hey, Melvin, Donald Trump, President Donald Trump picked 30 patriots that he would like to hear from. And you are one of those patriots. Click here now to take this poll." And you click there and you take the poll. And then he asks, "Can you give $125 to Donald Trump to secure freedom?" And blah, blah, blah. And I'll get it all the time. I even got one that said, "Hey, we heard from the other 29 patriots, but we have not heard from you, Melvin. And Donald Trump personally wants to know why he hasn't heard from you. Click this now." No, 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 no. The reason I decided to get that much more into it is because I'm doing the show now. And I want to know what they're saying. You know, I want to know what the president is saying to his white supremacist followers. So that's why I get the text. And I just sort of keep a record of what the texts are saying when they come in. But there's something I want to, this is the last thing I'm going to bounce and let you go on about your day. Something funny about those texts is I'll frequently get them and they'll say, "If you give, you know, whatever you give now will be 5 times matched or 3 times matched or double matched or whatever." And it's funny. When the Democrats call me and ask me for money, they will say to me, "Melvin, whatever money you give right now will be double matched or triple matched or 5 times matched." And I've asked this question several times when they call me. And it's usually the DNC that calls me or the DLC. And I'll say, "I'm sorry, a match? Who the hell is matching these contributions? And if y'all need money so bad, why don't you go to Uncle Moneybags and just get all the damn money from him? I mean, if I give $1 and he gives $5, I don't even think you need my buck. Just go get his $5 or whatever it is. Or my 50 up against his 250 or 150 or whatever they say the match is." And I thought it was just the Democrats until I signed up with the Trump campaign. And they send out the exact same emails. And I have to know, who the hell is matching these funds? And both parties are playing the same game. And why are they asking me for money if there is indeed a match? Perhaps this is something I can get into in the next show. But hey, I just want to say, with the first episode that I did solo of this show after bringing it back, I said I believe that there is this positive change and that positive change and this positive change and all of these good things that are coming. And as much as we hear so often the refrain that we just want things to go back to the way they were, I think what we're realizing now is we didn't have it right. And we're not going to go back to the way we were, because what we were doing wasn't really working. And a lot of the reason that we were doing it was because it's always what we've done. And what we should have known and what we realize now that we've had to stop doing it is the way we were doing it was not great. It was not the best way. And I believe when we come out on the other side of this, it seems hard to fathom, but the amazing amount of change that we're going to see come out of this will almost make it seem like it was worth it to go through this. I know there's a lot of people getting sick and they feel like they're dying. And obviously there's a lot of people that actually are dying. There's an article over at USA Today where a woman wrote an op-ed because her dad was a Trumper. Her dad got sick with corona and her dad died. And she directly pointed to the president and said, "Hey, what we know now about your response to this was that had you responded sooner, we wouldn't have so many people get sick and we definitely wouldn't have had so many people die." So we're learning. We're learning from the mistakes that we have made. And that should be the thing that we take away. We will go back to better, but we will not go back exactly to the way things were. Because we had some things right, but we didn't have them all right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.